Apply to Stacks to work on exciting projects focused on private equity, strategy and growth, exit planning, operational improvements, and data and analytics. Stacks is a boutique strategy firm serving private equity firms and their portfolio companies across several industries, including tech, healthcare, consumer and retail, industrials, and more. The cool thing about Stacks? You'll get near equal exposure to each industry, making for a well-rounded experience. Whether you're an undergraduate student, MBA candidate, experienced professional, or somewhere in between, Stacks has a role for you. Are you ready to uplevel your career? See which roles the firm is hiring for and submit your application via the link in this episode's show notes or on the careers page at stacks.com. STAX.com.
Hi, my name's Edward, and I'm going to be pursuing a career in consulting upon graduation. As an intern for Management Consulted, I would love it if you were able to fill out a quick survey linked in the show note description. This is going to help Strategy Simplified improve and become far more tailored to you, the individual, looking for a career in consulting. Thank you.
Welcome to this episode of Strategy Simplified. In today's wide-ranging conversation, I chat with Pete Giorgio, sports practice leader at Deloitte. In this fast-paced conversation, we touch on the sports industry outlook for 2023 and the rest of the decade, examining the trends that are taking place within sports and how they apply to other sectors of the economy. In addition, I talk with Pete about what sports consulting really is, who it's right for, and how you break in. On your marks, get set, let's go. Welcome to this special episode of Strategy Simplified. Naman here. I'm so excited to be joined by Pete Giorgio, the sports practice leader for both the U.S. And the global sports practice at Deloitte. Pete serves multiple sports clients as a principal at Deloitte Consulting. His main areas of focus are strategic growth, customer acquisition, digital transformation, innovation, organizational transformation, new business operations and implementation, and cross-unit integration. That's a little bit of a mouthful. So if you need to go back in and
lots of consulting speak there. So.
Re-listen to that, you feel free to just skip back and do that. But Pete, you've got a lot going on. You joined Deloitte after spending time with multiple IT strategy and development consulting firms. You served in the United States Air Force, achieving the rank of captain. Thank you for your service, by the way. You earned a BA in computer service from Amherst College. This is my favorite fun fact about you so far, where you were a four-year varsity basketball player, three-year starter, and you still hold the single-game rebounding record.
I mean, anything about sports or about basketball, you know that rebounding is the one true measure of heart. So when I lacked in height, I made up for it in taking up space and making room.
I've been the same way in every sport that I've played. Yeah, I've got to make up for a lack of talent with heart, grit, determination, and just a higher pain tolerance than everybody else.
You might have broken my rebounding record. Yeah. That you got.
So I have to ask you, what do you remember about the game and what is that rebounding record?
So we were playing Colby College, who at the time were the White Mules, but now they are the Mules. It was the ECAC, I think, quarterfinals in 1991. And it was a double overtime game, which many of my the folks that I played with still remind me that we had extra time, but I always remind them that was back in the day when there was no shot clock. So we were running four pointers. So there were a lot fewer rebounds available than usual. So
the pace of play was a lot different back then.
It was fortunately double overtime, and we ended up being on the losing end of that, but it was a great game. Actually, it was one of the most exhausting games I've ever played.
I believe it. So what are we talking here? 22 rebounds, 24?
22. Yeah.
22. Okay.
Yeah. It is since, I will have to admit, it has since been tied, just in case John studies to this. Yeah.
But it's not. And that's broke. That's just a regular night for Nikola Jokic. You know, it's like,
exactly.
No big deal.
Yeah. Exactly. Although add another 15 assists and 40 points. And, it's like a day at the office for him.
There's a reason he's the back-to-back MVP. So don't worry, everybody, this is not turning into a sports podcast, but Pete does lead the sports practice at Deloitte. And Pete, I'm just wondering if you could just share a little bit more about your background than I was able to share. What would you like folks to know about you before we really dive into the work that you do?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a bit of a varied background, honestly. I did not follow the traditional, you know, come to a consulting firm for a few years, get my MBA, come back, grind away. Like you said, you know, I was a pencil pocket protector wearing computer nerd out of college, was in the Air Force for a while, got out and joined a technology consulting firm that got bought by a bigger one, rolled into a company that some of you may have heard of called Monitor Group, which was a boutique strategy consulting firm that Deloitte bought 10 years ago and really came to sports, honestly, pretty late. It was only about 7 or 8 years ago that I went to the firm and said, hey, I noticed we don't do much in this space. Can I really sort of push and try and build a practice? And so got lucky on a few things and have grown the practice from there.
So for those of us who know, sports is big business, but others who are listening may be like, sports consulting, come on. Is that even like real consulting? So can you talk to us a little bit more about what the practice does and the types of problems that you help solve and the clients that you support?
Yeah. It is big business, but like any industry, it has its quirks, right? I've spent time in grocery, I've spent time in women's beauty products and other things too, and they all have their quirks, and sports is no different. I mean, a lot of us, it has the benefit and the sort of detriment of being an industry we are all very familiar with, or most of us. But we're very familiar with it from a fan perspective, right? We buy tickets, we buy merchandise, we watch it on TV, we do fantasy, we make a bet, things like that. And in a very interesting way, you know, that while that, you know, accounts for a lot of revenue that happens in the industry, a lot of the big dollars happen behind the scenes, you know, media rights deals, sponsorship deals, large licensing deals, things like that. And so, and then, you know, you layer upon that quite complex systems of companies, right? So if you think about the NBA, for instance, they are, they are the league, but each of the teams is a separate franchise that is a separate legal entity. And by the way, may have multiple other separate legal entities, maybe for the stadium, maybe for some of their other businesses, things like that too. And so it's pretty complex. And in all of that are the same business problems every industry has, you know, everything from supply chain to organizational development and learning to digital transformation to back office implementation to all of those same things. These are large organizations and complex organizations that have the same challenge as everybody else. And so, you know, one day I might be, you know, working with a client, helping them think about their data strategy and where and how should they not only store the data, but use the data. The next day, I'm helping a client think about their org design. The next day after that, I'm helping somebody buy a team or a club. And the day after that, I'm helping thinking about, you know, changing the fan experience of a stadium. So for me, that's the exciting part. That's why I do consulting in the first place and why I'm in that business, is that variety of opportunities. And they all exist in sports.
Absolutely. Once you take that shiny veneer of, you know, Phoenix Suns or whoever off the label, it's like, okay, we need a data strategy just like any other business. We need to enhance our customer experience just like any other business.
We need to make sure that they face in the stadium. We've got our payroll for these athletes might be a little higher than a normal payroll, but it's still just payroll, and those guys have to pay taxes, and you know, all of those pieces exist.
Pete, there's a lot of upheaval, at least from my external perspective. There's a lot of upheaval right now in the sports and the sports media landscape. You know, here in the U.S., just a day or two ago, there's a regional sport, regional broadcast provider who declared bankruptcy. And so now Major League Baseball, for example, is trying to figure out how they're going to stream local games in, you know, 20 of their 30 markets, for example. You know, the NBA is trying to expand internationally. The NFL is trying to expand internationally. Can you just talk to us about some of the trends that you expect to see out in the world of sports and sports media in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, you know, I think behind a lot of, and some of the examples that you talked and some other ones too, is a fundamental shift, you know, in a couple of things and maybe two or three things that are happening, and not just in sports, but broadly in entertainment, you know, where and how you and I want to consume sports is vastly different than it was 20 years ago, right? I mean, 20 years ago, this was primarily a medium that you either watched on TV or you sat in a seat and you did it for 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, whatever the time limit is, and you consumed it, you know, all together. And the next day, maybe you read about it in the newspaper and a box score, but that was the primary way that we consume this. And today, you know, all sorts of companies have retrained every single one. I don't care if you're a boomer or a Gen Z, they've retrained us to sort of expect more, to expect us to be able to see the best clips on a game on our phone, to be able to go in the metaverse and watch these things, to be able to instantly have our watch sort of pop up the score as things happen, to, you know, all of these things. And the ability for the industry, and when I say the industry, I mean, you know, not just the sports brand franchises and organizations themselves, but their media partners, their technology partners. There's a fundamental shift that's actually happening across all of those that's driving it. And I think, you know, anytime you see an industry going through these types of momentous shifts, you know, business models change, right? The way you actually make money and do business will change. And you know, sports, I honestly think, is actually one of the most resilient industries that's out there. If you just watch the way they reacted to COVID, you know, it was breathtaking how quickly they pivoted. And so, you know, I do think that we'll see a lot of that happen. But, you know, I think there's a number of trends that are, I mean, literally how media is produced, like what happens between the time that light goes into that camera and light comes out of your device, whether it's a TV or a headset or a phone. There are momentous changes that are happening. This gone are the days of big trucks pulling up outside of stadiums and people in there. It's all happening in the cloud and it's being distributed, right? And it's happening real time. And, you know, it's happening in ways that allow you to not just have a, you know, a linear broadcast coming out of it, but in the moment, splitting it up into clips and having alternate audio feeds and, you know, all of those things. You know, what you do in a stadium today is vastly different, right? You go from watching the game to looking at a replay on your phone, to go to the fantasy lounge, to go to the bar that's right next to the court. Just, and I think all of these things are really sort of driving these giant changes that are, you know, challenging the status quo in a lot of instances, creating new opportunities and many more in a way that I find fascinating. So
the common thread I'm hearing across those trends is greater accessibility. But for the fan, mm-hmm. to the team and the franchise, you know, greater flexibility in how I choose to engage with the content that I want to engage with. But in my understanding, that also means that the ways that you monetize my attention are changing. Can you just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I would add to that just fundamental technology changes. Like what is possible today is so different than 2 years ago, is so different than 5 years ago. That's underpinning all of that. And so, you know, if you take a step back and look at the business and sports in general, it's really about monetizing eyeballs, hearts, and minds, right? How do I get Naman to watch a specific event? And then how do I, you know, charge him for that ability to watch it, whether it be through a ticket or through a subscription or these other things. But honestly, that's not the big dollars. You know, once I have Naman and I have his heart, mind, and eyeballs, I'm figuring out ways to monetize that, whether it be with sponsors or other companies or other places as well. And so the ways and the opportunities to grab those hearts, minds, and eyeballs are just so vastly different, right? It's on your phone, it's on these other mediums. And what you're seeing is organizations really start to flex and change and multiply in many instances what those opportunities are, what those business models are. So that's part of it. I think, you know, another thing that I think is a really interesting trend in sports is the real estate that surrounds a lot of these stadiums. So not only do I have Naman's heart, mind, and eyeballs, I also have him captive in a district around my stadium related to a game. And I can use that to think about where and how, you know, Naman wants to eat, where he wants to shop, in a lot of instances where he wants to live. right? And so you see a lot of, you know, one of the biggest trends we see, and especially on the stadium side with sports, is these districts. I mean, think about what's happening in Los Angeles. You know, what Mr. Kroenke has done in Inglewood, that's a 300-acre city that is around that. The stadium just takes up, I don't know how many, it's a fraction of that. The rest of it is going to be residences and retail, and rest, you know, all of the above. And that's a new business model. That's why, interestingly, it's actually not a new business model. There's other industries. Like 20 years ago in the grocery world, you know, you build a grocery store and a development around it, and you made money off of, you know, the leasing to the dry cleaner next door, the restaurant next door, things like that. So it is applying it in that context. So you're seeing sports get very creative and evolve a lot of these new mediums. And by the way, it's just the beginning. So I think we're going to see some really interesting things happen over the next 5 years in terms of really sort of continuing to push that.
It's amazing what is considered old hat in one industry, when you port it over to another one, can be considered creative and innovative.
Kudos
to Stan Kroenke and others who are importing that model. I think of Wrigleyville in Chicago, and some of what's happened in Boston around Fenway Park as
Wrigley,
early models.
What the Bills are planning, the Titans are. I mean, it's happening left. And by the way, it's now happening in Europe and other places too. And so it's a trend that will continue.
So I would argue we're still pretty early in that evolution in the sports landscape. Are there a couple other key trends that you would say, hey, we're in the early adoption phase of these, but they're going to become ubiquitous over the next decade? I know your team just released a sports industry outlook report.
Yes.
And so maybe a couple of them would be included in there.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think one of the fascinating pieces of the sports industry is the fact that as important as it is to make money, to have a positive P&L on an ongoing basis, a lot of these are actually long-term valuation plays, especially clubs and properties that you have, right? And so when you see, you know, the Phoenix Suns being sold for what they were just sold for, when you see the Commanders on the market for a certain number, when you see the Ottawa Senators bringing in bids of a certain size, you know, that's a reflection of an asset that's growing in value. And one of the interesting things that we've seen, especially in the last couple of years, is, you know, the financial markets waking up to that asset, right? To sort of think about, you know, as they look at different industries, different sectors, different investment opportunities, when you see, you know, Steve Ballmer pay $2 billion for the Clippers and everyone, you know, said that's going to be the new record and nobody's ever going to beat that. And then the Suns just doubled that, right? You know, that type of growth is hard to find. And so we're seeing a lot of private equity companies, a lot of other special investment vehicles really start to look at sports as an asset class by itself, and really sort of thinking through where and how. And I think that obviously will bring a lot of dollars into the industry, but also a lot of sophistication too, in terms of, you know, the types of returns that these mechanisms and these organizations expect. I think we'll actually drive a lot of that growth that you were talking about before too. So that's one that I think is fascinating, and I think we'll continue to see play out. Another one that I'm really bullish on is, I believe fundamentally that women's sports right now is undervalued. That, you know, we are in the middle of, or at the beginning of, a steep growth in terms of the value of women's sports, you know, partly because we're starting to see it used to be you would hear the argument, nobody watches women's sports, and that's no longer true. We have data left and right that talks about women's sports seeing the viewership, the attention that oftentimes surpasses men's sports, right? And you're starting to see a lot of organizations sort of wake up to that and realize that. And so I think it's an undervalued asset right now. I mean, which one would you rather bet on doubling in value over the next few years? You know, the Phoenix Suns, or, you know, an NWSL team or WNBA team, right? Again, smaller base, and so doubling is not the same, but if you can think about these things in a percentage basis. And so I love where women's sports is headed, and I'm very bullish on that, especially as we think about it, not just as an economic driver, but a social driver, right? As we think about the types of causes that we see women's athletes get behind, whether it be health equity or social injustice or things like that, you're seeing you're seeing a renaissance, or you're seeing a growth that is not just economic, but purpose-led in a way that I find very exciting. So excited about that. I think we are just in the very early stages of artificial intelligence fundamentally changing sport, you know, both on the performance side. So think about, you know, collecting data and analytics about what's actually happening in a basketball game, what's actually happening in a football game, and using that to do everything from injury prevention to developing new plays to really understanding, you know, should I be starting a small lineup for my basketball team, or sorry, but we're just at the very beginning of that, partly because historically, to really do AI well, you need vast amounts of data, right, for it to work. And we had lots of data, but we didn't have that vast amount. Now we're starting to see a lot of these video volumetric plays that, you know, just, you know, produce terabytes of data per match in a way that a human can't really dig into. We're going to start to see that. And also on the business side of sports, as we start to understand more and more about fan behavior and where and how we attract audiences, we're going to see it there as well. So I think that one, I think especially, is going to be very interesting to see where that goes and what that leads to.
I think those are all really fascinating trends. I do want to double click into one of them for
sure.
A minute. And it was the growth of women's sports and your belief that it's an undervalued asset, you know, in relation to some of the other franchises and leagues that may be out there. Curious if you're seeing that in certain geographies over others or in certain sports over others.
It's interesting. We're actually starting to see a lot of data that I used to think it was, I live in the United States. I predominantly see it in places like not just the WNBA and the NWSL, but for anybody out there, you should take a look at Athletes Unlimited. It's a really interesting new model and certainly what we're seeing in NIL and college sports, things like that. But you hear a lot about what's happening in women's cricket in India, right? And women's football or soccer in Europe. Those things are, we're seeing a lot of it growing across the board. Maybe not at some of the same levels, and maybe not with some of the same attention, but I think it is a global, it's a global issue, right? And it's a global phenomenon. And so I think we'll continue to see that as well.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
Investor Group Services is a private equity focused boutique consultancy that prides itself on fostering a collegial, collaborative, and non-hierarchical culture. The firm puts on regular social events like happy hours, case team dinners, golf excursions, and office visits to Fenway Park to watch the Red Sox. In addition, due to the firm's smaller size, every IGS employee plays a part in the firm's growth and development. IGS pays it back with extensive on-the-job and formal professional development training and mentorship. If you're looking to start or continue a career in consulting, look no further than IGS. Explore current job openings at the link in the show notes or at igsboston.com.
Pete, I want to transition our conversation a little bit to talk more about Deloitte specifically,
sure.
As opposed to just the sports landscape more broadly.
Sure.
And so a lot of folks who are listening to this podcast are probably going to find themselves in a similar boat as me, which is, hey, I love sports. I love business. Sports consulting feels like that could be the perfect kind of intersection of my passion, my interest, my skills, etc. Can you just talk to us about some of the opportunities that may be available inside of your practice area at Deloitte?
Yeah, I mean, again, I would say a lot of people ask me, how do I get it? Right. And usually quickly followed by, how do I get into Deloitte sports? And what one of the first questions they often ask me is, what should I study or what experience do I need? And things like that. And the biggest thing I tell them, well, one, you know, broadly within the consulting space, we do everything for sports teams. So, right. Like I said before, there's a breadth of things that we bring to sports teams. So it's not just analytics. It's not just it's all the above. And so I would say to anybody who joins a consulting firm, or joins Deloitte, you know, there is a sports practice there somewhere, or a sports project, and at some point in time, they probably need your skill set. So So I have to talk to them less around, you know, focusing just on sports and more of consulting as a passionate industry. And I believe firmly that a broad range of experiences of industries actually creates the best consultants over the long term. But I do get approached by many, many people who say, yeah, that's great, but I want to do sports. And I think, listen, there's lots of opportunities to get into sports, and consulting is only one of them. Obviously, we have a quite established, I would think, well-respected practice here, but you know, there are practices and many consulting firms, and a lot of times, not the big ones, but the smaller firms, right? Both specialized firms, but a lot of the big sports marketing firms have consulting arms as well, and so there's opportunities there. But a lot of times, the best way is to get that on-the-ground experience. If you go work for a AAA baseball team, you're going to learn more about how sports works. You're also going to be selling hot dogs in the morning, selling tickets in the afternoon, cleaning the bathrooms later on that day, and, you know, raking the field afterwards, right? So you learn all aspects of it. And so, but I tell everybody, you know, if you're interested in sports and you're interested in Deloitte, apply. We do not hire, especially at the, I would say, you know, for people earlier in their career, directly into the sports practice. So like a lot of consulting firms, we have a general pool of consultants. So people apply, they join that pool. Once you're in the door, we have lots of opportunities to get involved in sports. And not only just for projects for clients, we do a lot of research. We write white papers. We do some pro bono work. We have a community right now that is hotly working on all of their March Madness brackets, because that being the king of the sports practice at Deloitte for March Madness is a big thing. But we have a big community around it as well. And so there's lots of opportunities to get involved.
That's fun. Pete, I have to ask you, who's in your final four?
You know what? I do my bracket every year for the bottom one. Like, I don't start with who I think it's going to win. I kind of do it and see what happens. And I was surprised this year. I had Purdue. But I got to go with the big guys. So.
And that makes sense to me. I've got UCLA, so we'll have to see in a couple
there
weeks.
You go. Maybe we'll see. I'm more interested in the women's final four. I think Indiana's going to be tough this year. UConn with AZ back. It'll be interesting to sort of see how they do. I mean, Stanford's going to be tough, but I don't see anybody beating South Carolina.
South Carolina, yeah.
I think they're in the final, and whoever plays them will be an amazing team, and will have had an amazing season. But I think Aaliyah is going out on top. So
it's just a little bit of bad luck that you're at your peak at the same time that an all-time great team is at their peak.
Exactly,
and it just sometimes goes like that. Yeah.
Though they've got some really good kids. Freshman and sophomore too, so this may not be their peak.
might be the next UConn. We'll see
if Don has anything to do with it. I think it probably will. Don't count UConn. You can, I mean, 15 Final Fours in a row is got to be one of the most amazing statistics in sports. So
and may never be matched, as great as South Carolina might end up being one day.
That's just hard.
Once the calendar flips to March, it seems like it's UConn's time. So.
Yeah. Depends on how AZ's knee is feeling. So
I know that you mentioned, Pete, you can't break in directly into the sports practice at Deloitte. There's a generalist pool of consultants that you draw from. So just speaking about consulting more broadly for a minute, what are a couple of the top skills, qualities that Deloitte looks for in its consultants more broadly?
Yeah, I would say the biggest things that and I'm involved in a lot of recruiting. So the biggest things that I look for are, number one, ability to break down and solve problems. A lot of people ask me, do I need an econ degree? Do I need a math degree? I was like, actually, I care less about you. If you can break down and solve problems in your philosophy class or your bench class, that's all I need. I can teach you PowerPoint. I can teach you Excel. I can't teach you how to really sort of fundamentally be able to look at a problem from all sides, break it into its constituent parts and solve it. So that's usually number one. Number two, and I take this absolutely from my sports career, which is we don't do anything in consulting by ourselves. Everything is as a team. And so how are you going to fit within the team? Are you able to work well with others? Are you able to recognize and step up and lead when it's needed? Are you able to follow, recognize and follow when it's needed? Where and how do you show up and will you show up in those different ways? Is a big piece for me too. And so it's, for me, it's really those kind of two pieces together that, and I'd say maybe a third one too, is just your willingness to learn, right? That layered on top of those two. You are not going to be an expert in any industry or any particular type of work, especially coming out of undergrad. You've got some skills and you've got, but being able to sort of sit there, learn both implicitly and explicitly as you grow in that job, that's the biggest thing, because that's what we do in consulting. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up, right? I've got 5 or 6 more jobs to do this year, never mind the rest of my career. And for me, that's the exciting part. I'm looking for people to get excited about that.
That is the unique value prop of consulting. And a certain type of person that's wired to love that is going to thrive in that environment.
Well, it's also interesting because I talk to a lot of folks, and I'm going to start sounding like the old dude now, so I apologize. But, you know, when I talk to a lot of undergrads, you know, they kind of think about their career differently than I did. And they want to, you know, they want to go someplace for a couple of years and then get a different job for a couple of years and move around. And one of the things I remind them is Deloitte, especially now that we are so vast in terms of all the different things we do, you can have 500 different careers just at Deloitte. Right. And so I think it's a great opportunity, both for the person who's known since they were a kid that they wanted to work in sports, as well as the person who, you know, doesn't really know what they want to do, but they want to do it with smart people and people they like and learn over time. And I think we can offer both in a way that I think is quite unique.
Is that what's really kept you at Deloitte for over a decade, that ability to have 500 jobs in a year, or is there other considerations that have come into play for you as well?
I think it's definitely that. I also feel like the other thing, I think Deloitte's superpower is its willingness and ability to actually be, for such a big organization, it's actually pretty flexible. And that flexibility comes with the trust that it places in people like me. You know, the firm, when I go to them and say, I know we don't do anything in sports consulting today, but I would like to build a practice, the firm says, great, we love that. How can we help you? Right? That when we want to sort of do certain things or go into new businesses, there's an entrepreneurial spirit that I think a lot of people are surprised at, because they think of, you know, it's a big firm. There's got to be a lot of bureaucracy. There's got to be a lot of process and forms and things like that. And don't get me wrong, we have plenty of forms, but you are surprisingly entrepreneurial for a company that is that large. And for me, that's invigorating. For me, that is, you know, both a testament to the leadership we have, but also, you know, a testament to what will continue to be moving forward.
That's not typically what I expect to hear when I ask people about an organization the size of Deloitte.
No,
so
it was not what I expected when I joined.
So to your point, I think that's a big testament to the leadership at the firm.
Yeah.
Pete, we typically like to end our episodes with a couple of personal questions, get to know you a little bit better. So I'm going to just throw some questions at you rapid fire and just feel free to just give me some short, snappy answers. So first one item from your sports bucket list.
Ooh, I really want to go to the Women's World Cup this summer in New Zealand.
Sounds incredible. Your favorite sports experience so far?
Watching my daughter's team win the NESCAC championship in basketball 2 years ago and the joy on their faces. So, and maybe the Patriots' most recent Super Bowl. But I mean, women's NESCAC basketball beats Super Bowl any day. So
100%, 100%. Yeah. Your top weekend hobby when you're not in the road?
Cooking.
What's your best dish?
Ooh, I do a lot of good Italian. I'm a baker too, though. You know, pies. I'm a big fan of my pies. So,
okay, we're all heading to Pete's house for Thanksgiving. Got it.
Well, that was It can mean pizza too. So just another form of pie.
And then something you're reading, listening to, watching, really a piece of media that you're consuming these days that's, you know, inspiring you or that you're finding interesting.
Ooh, that's a hard one. I feel like I'm reading and watching things all the time. And I can't give you the honest answer, which is I'm really into The Last of Us right now.
I'll take that.
Yeah, you'll take that. I'm really enjoying Full Swing. The new documentary that's out about what was happening in golf last year.
Pete Giorgio is a principal with Deloitte Consulting. He leads Deloitte's global and U.S. sports practices, serving multiple sports clients across the globe. Pete, thanks so much for joining us today on Strategy Simplified.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me. This was fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Strategy Simplified. If you like what you heard, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're preparing for consulting recruiting this cycle, join Black Belt. Black Belt is the world's premier case prep program. Spots for the April cohort are filling up fast. Learn more and join today through the link in the show notes. We'll see you next time.